Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
We are we're having a good day here, buddy, because I just watched another episode of my favorite show, Big Brother. Did you watch it today? I'm sorry, no, not Big Brother. I'm sorry, Dodgers versus Padres. Oh, it was a good game. Dodgers win 5-2. Take the series from the Padres 2 out of 3 in San Diego. It's always nice. It's always nice to beat our non-rivals from the South. But Brandon, how are you, buddy? Good to see you again. It's me, Jesse Rowe, King of Crespi, joined as always by Brandon Bolger, Lord Paramount of Torrance, California.
They call me royalty in the streets, dude, but I could follow that up being gross. It's so great to be back, Jess. What a series. That was a lot of fun. Man, it's been a little bit since I've seen you. Disappointing series out in St. Louis. Did save it, so I was really happy to see the Dodgers win a thriller in game one and get that two-game winning streak going. Jesse, you know what I was thinking to myself watching game one of the Padres and Dodgers series this week?
What's that?
I was thinking how important it is to like, comment, share, subscribe, whatever you want with us here. It really helps out your boys here at Deferred Collusion. We are out here trying to bring you the best content possible, our very valued viewer, and obviously our very intelligent viewer, because that's how you found us. And good for you, you're smart, and you're pretty attractive. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining us.
You're pulling like a DJ Khaled on our fan base right now.
I don't know what that means.
You're smart. You're beautiful. You know, you never seen that video?
Dude, I stay out of that stuff, but just want to shout out the fit, dude, just to our back-to-back champs, dude, 2020. We love you, Kobe.
That's a dope shirt.
Yeah, dude.
Good shirt.
But anyways, Jess, so what I was thinking during game one, this is just off the top of the dome, honest, I lied, not off the top of the dome, this is just from the heart. This is the most exciting brand of baseball in the MLB today. There is no other rivalry right now that I think has the kind of star-studded appeal that the Padres, you know, the small market, lowly San Diego Padres, baby brother to the big dog in the NL West, the billion-dollar boys, the Los Angeles Dodgers, Hollywood primetime must-see TV. But Jesse, it was a thriller in game one.
Yeah. Jackson Merrill even did a post game interview. His comment on the game was actually kind of funny. I thought it was a joke at first, but he said that game was sick, dude. That game was sick. And then he clarified and he said that was just like one of the best games he's ever been a part of, specifically a regular season game. And it's true. It was an excellent game. It was a weird game. I made a video on our socials basically saying that game was like drunk. That game was like, that game I felt like I was on drugs watching that game, because the first half of it was just terrible pitching, terrible defense. I believe there were a couple of throwing errors. Machado had a throwing error. There was a pop fly that was hit that the Padres lost sight of, and then it ended up falling outside the infield. Just a lot of messy things were happening in that game. Lead changes, the pitching, Dustin May did not have it, neither did Nick Pivetta. It was just kind of all over the place, and then it really settled in to the Dodgers really kind of shutting down the Padres in the second half of the game, which allowed them the chance to come back and win it in extra innings. It was awesome. It was basically like it set the tone for the entire series. And, you know, the Dodgers emptied all of their bullets. They emptied the clip in that game with their bullpen. and their lineup, and they, you know, they just barely eked it out. And I think that they were they played, I think, like, what was it, 7 games in a row the week before? Yeah. So they didn't have a day off. They hadn't had a day off in something like 10 days starting this game. So you could tell that they were like a little gassed going into game two. But game one was, yeah, I mean, that was by far the best game of the season for the in terms of the game the Dodgers have played.
I completely agree. It really showed the dog in that big dog I was mentioning earlier. But anyways, game one was the most exciting game of the series. It really felt to me like this was going to be a bounce back series for a lot of guys. Tatis had some fireworks. You know, we saw some pitchers take some big steps. You know, Bonda had a great series. Vesia had a great series, picking up each other. We'll get into it a little bit later, but with how game two shaped out, you know.
Well, let me tell you really quick before we go to game two. Before we go to game two, I do want to say the story for me in game one really was the bullpen, because they went five innings, zero
all
earned
series,
runs.
Really, all series. Yeah,
they did it twice. They two different times this series. They went five innings, gave up zero earned runs. They did give up a run in game one, but that was because of the ghost runner on second in extra innings. And then in game three, they gave up a run because of an error by Haesung Kim. So, but both runs were unearned. Other than that, the Dodgers bullpen in games one and three was the difference in this series and is what won the Dodgers this series, as well as the bottom half of the order in game one, because everybody, with the exception of Teoscar Hernandez in game one, everybody got a hit in the starting lineup. Everybody in the starting lineup got a hit. And when this was something that you and I talked about ad nauseum to start this season, was in the first 40 games or so, that bottom half of the Dodgers lineup was just non-existent. I mean, especially with how Conforto was struggling, how Muncy was struggling, it was just non-existent. And then they call up Haesung Kim, Max Muncy gets his glasses, gets a new pair of glasses, and it just seems like it's made a huge difference in terms of how the Dodgers are able to extend at bats, make the pitchers work, grind out the opposition. And that was a true team win in game one. So, yeah. I think, to give a shout out in that game, Anthony Bonda, two scoreless innings. Kirby Yates had a scoreless inning. I believe Tanner Scott also pitched well. I think he gave a run, but that was the ghost runner once again. Mm-hmm. So just awesome stuff from the bullpen in that game that really, I think, won them the series. I think game one won them the series is the way I would put it. So.
I disagree with you that game one won them the series, but I think game one shows the difference in ceiling in teams. I'm such a dork. I hit the bill with my hat. But I think it showed the little difference in the ceiling of the teams right now at this point. But I think the Pen has that, like I'm going to keep saying, has that dog in them, dude. These Pen boys are just different. And when everybody's healthy, which I know sounds like it's impossible for the fucking Dodgers, excuse my language, I'm sorry for cursing.
It's okay.
It's just so darn frustrating, Jesse.
Yeah. You're darn tootin'.
Son of a gun.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it was a really big bounce back. And the reason why I don't feel like game two is what set up the series win is because I think it's hard to argue that Matt Sauer didn't kind of wear this one. For the Dodgers bullpen. And it was so impactful, Jess. Alex Vesia talked about it with David Vasse at the end of the game. He wanted to give a shout out like, hey man, this guy went out, went through the most pitches he's thrown, you know, all season or maybe in his pro career. I got to look that up. Sorry. I should have that in the notes. But he wore it right. And, was probably exposed a little bit, but because of that, because he, you know, went out on a shield for lack of a better term, he was able to save some bullets for the Pen.
What does that remind you of, Brandon?
It reminds me of my boy Brett Honeywell. Are you
there? You go. So when Dodger fans are getting all upset about why Dave Roberts was leaving in Matt Sauer too long in this game, guys, Yes. Did the Dodgers punt game two? Did they intentionally lose game two? Without question. After the fourth or fifth inning, they clearly were just like, we give up on this game. They threw Kike Hernandez in there in the sixth inning. He pitched 2 2/3 in this game. They punted to save their best arms for game three with the intention of winning the series. And it paid off. Look at that's exactly what the Dodgers did against the Yankees and against the Mets in the playoffs. They threw Brent Honeywell out there basically to throw batting practice for three or four innings to save the best bullpen arms. That's 100% what happened with Matt Sauer. I know it's frustrating because you want to beat the Padres every single time you play them, but in Major League Baseball, sometimes you do have to have a, you know, the long-term view of things. And I didn't have a problem with Dave or the Dodgers kind of just letting him out there to dry. And I don't think Matt Sauer had a problem with it either. I think Matt Sauer was more than willing to do what it took for the team. Did it affect his stats? Yes. But I think he earned a lot of bonus points and brownie points
respect.
With his teammates.
He earned a lot of respect.
Yeah.
You know, because, dude, we've seen guys have meltdowns on the mound for a lot less than however many runs his final, you know, tally earned runs, you know, went up that night. You know, Bauer, for example, you know, tossing a ball over center field when he was on the Indians, you know, now the Guardians. But yeah. Just, you know, just naming one just off the top of the dome. Another thing that happened during that game in the what we'll call the punt game of the series, Kike Hernandez came in the sixth inning to pitch wearing his pitching helmet. It caused such a stir in the baseball world. Our YouTube baseball creator friend, not personally, but I love his stuff, Fuzzy. He said that the Dodgers disrespected the MLB by putting Kike in the sixth. But Jesse, you know, now having the benefit of a little bit of, you know, time travel and, you know, having played game three, Dodgers winning, Dave looks like a bit of a genius now, right? I saw on Padres Twitter, people were calling Dave Roberts a masochist for leaving Matt Sauer in there and how they would take a Schilt over Roberts any day as their manager. And you know what? I think it's that narrow-minded view sight, right? Like you were talking about, you want to win every game, but it's about having the perspective and the wherewithal to go, you know what? I'm going to surrender this battle, but we're going to win the war.
Brandon.
The war is just a series, dude. Shouts out
to who won the series?
Exactamente, Poppy.
Yeah, and so when because I also saw Padre fans really gloating about how they won 11-1, you know, joking about how it was a nail biter and things like that. And look, I do that too. I made a video about the Dodgers beating the Yankees 18-2. I was calling it a nail biter. So I was doing a little bit of trolling of my own. But at that point, the Dodgers had won the series. So that's why I was doing it. They had already won 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. Everything needs to have context to it. And like, look at the NBA and how excessive load management has become. How many players just sit on the bench, take games off, like intentionally losing to get better draft picks. That maybe kind of happened in baseball for some teams. Like, I know that the Astros were kind of tanking to get the number one pick for a couple of years, which led to their quote unquote dynasty, which we could rehash.
It led to their core, right? No doubt.
But this is, we're talking about one game in the stretch of an 162 game season when the Dodgers were down, 8-1 when Kike came into the game, where the Dodgers bullpen was taxed from not having a day off for, you know, like a week and a half, from being down two of their three of their top six starting pitchers. They have the most overworked bullpen in baseball. I'm sorry, Fuzzy. I'm sorry, everybody. But like, sometimes you just have to have the long view of things. And I'm sorry that Dave Roberts didn't want to injure one of his pitcher's arms just to fucking fit your worldview and your barometer of what the proper baseball etiquette is, and not to like offend the fan base. Like, we're who cares? Because it's Dodgers pod, it sounds to me like Fuzzy was sitting at home and just was like mad that he wasn't able to see a close baseball game. You know what I mean? Like, That's what it kind of sounds like to me.
Do you think that there's any like right to feel that way? We were, I did just go on a little tangent right earlier about how Dodgers, Padres, I believe is the most exciting brand of baseball. But that was me being completely, you know, pretending like game two didn't happen. It wasn't an 11-1 blowout. But yeah, dude, I think that is more of the, I don't know. I think it's just more of the kind of brand of baseball that the Dodgers have been playing the last decade or so, that it's like, okay, we'll sacrifice the now for the series, you know, ideally.
If you want to blame anybody, blame the Dodgers, like health department. They're blame the Dodgers' ability to keep pitchers healthy, because that's the real issue for the Dodgers right now. It's not that the Dodgers punted a game when they went down 9-1 early, and they were, or whatever it was, and they were just like, well, I think it was 9-0. I don't even think the Dodgers, I think they were getting shut out.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
For most of that game, I think Pajes homered.
He's had seven innings of scoreless baseball. I mean,
yeah,
he struck out Teo with two men on, or no, bases loaded.
Cease was great. But also the Dodgers pulled Freeman from the game. They pulled Shohei from the game. They pulled everybody from the game. I think that's what people are kind of mad about, is that the Dodgers just essentially gave everybody half a day at that point. But it's like, dude, like, players don't even play back to backs in the NBA. At least everybody played the game. They just said, hey, we're not going to risk injury for this one to try to come back down 8 or 9 runs. It's really not that big of a deal. Hey, if we're at the end of this season, right, and the Dodgers are in a tie with the Padres for the division lead on game 162, and that game comes back to bite us, then whatever, I'll eat that. But like, This is a long view for the Dodgers of not only winning the series, but also keeping people healthy. And it ended up working. So what is there really to say about it at this point?
Dude, I think that's a great take. I couldn't have said it better myself. In my mind, that's how I said it.
And another thing about people saying about Padre fans, I do want to take a little shot at them right now, because they were bragging about winning that game 11-1. You know, let me just give Padre fans a little dose of reality about what actually happened in this series. The Dodgers threw out Dustin May, their sixth pitcher, when everybody's healthy. Yep. They threw out Lou Trevino and Matt Sauer, who aren't even going to make the postseason roster.
Shouts out Lou Trevino for getting the win today.
Shout out Lou Trevino. But he's probably not going to make the postseason roster. Most likely, I would assume, barring.
Hey, he's been a dog for us so far.
Yeah, but we're getting back. But we're getting back Emmett Sheehan. We're getting back Brusdar Graterol, Blake Treinen. It's going to be hard to find room for Lou Trevino on this roster, right?
And Jesse, to your point, real quick, I just want to add that Dave Roberts had mentioned on, I think it was Dodger Talk or whatever, Dodger Radio, that Matt Sauer is actually progressing faster than expected. So Emmett Sheehan is I'm looking at the notes.
You're good.
But Emmett Sheehan is on the way back faster than expected. So Dodger fans, keep an eye out. We could be seeing him as soon as maybe next week.
And that's going to be a huge addition that the Dodgers need, right? But in this series specifically, Dustin May, Lou Trevino, Matt Sauer, those guys aren't going to be on the postseason roster most likely, other than May. Ben Kasperius is the opener today. who's not a starting pitcher. He Dave Roberts did say that he's reportedly going to be stretched out to be a starting pitcher.
Whoa.
But not a starting pitcher as of the game today. And the Dodgers took 2 out of 3 from you guys when you threw out your ace and Dylan Cease and Nick Pivetta, who was your big free agent signing of the offseason, who is your number 3 starter right now without Yu Darvish. Those two guys are going to be in your playoff roster, and the Dodgers beat you 2 out of 3, and you guys were bragging about winning 11-1 in a game where they threw out Kike Hernandez to pitch in the 6th inning. Like, I just want to keep some perspective for you guys before you, like, start bragging about winning 11-1 in a game that the Dodgers did not care about winning.
Mm.
So, just, you know.
That was just beautifully said.
Just food
said
for
again.
Thought, guys.
That was beautifully said again. Yeah. Dude, how do you feel about Dustin May? How do you feel about his stuff?
He didn't look good, that's for sure. He didn't pitch well.
Not a lot of swings and miss. The stuff looks like it's there. I feel like it's, I don't know. I feel like, again, there's a high ceiling for him. But it's tough to imagine him in the bullpen, dude. I mean, again, this is granted. We're assuming there's a 1 through 5 in front of him. Of healthy pitchers at the end of the season, that he wouldn't be on this, you know, starting pitching raw, whatever for the playoffs. But do you think he's got even the swing and miss to be a relief pitcher right now? I still got all my money in on D-May to Beast, but as of right now.
Well, all I know is this, is that we have to make sure that he doesn't eat any salad down the stretch of this of this season. I'm just kidding. I love Dustin May, but I do feel like he is a player who's on his way out for the Dodgers, and I say that with nothing but love. I'm pretty sure this is going to be his last season with the Dodgers. Mm. I don't see the Dodgers extending him. Because this he is in a walk year here. What were we saying about Dustin May a couple years back when before he blew out his arm for the first time? Was he has electric velocity, he has nasty stuff, but he really has trouble with swing and miss. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that he's not a north-south pitcher. He's an east-west pitcher. Everything that he throws is going left or right. And which leads into barrels. So he relies a lot on ground balls because he doesn't get a lot for a guy that throws 99-100 before he blew out his arm. Didn't get a lot of strikeouts, right? So
they say that about Bruzdar as well.
Exactly, it's the same thing with Bruzdar ground ball. May has worked on it. He has incorporated a 4-seam fastball, and obviously his slider when it's working is super nasty.
One of the best
in
the game.
But with that downward tick in velocity, now he's more than 94 to 96 range.
Yeah.
It's just he's running into more barrels now because he's not – that extra velocity, you know, led to more weak contact, more ground balls, and now it's that extra split second allows for a little bit more barrels. And I'm a little bit concerned about Dustin May being anything more than a 4 or 5 starter at the major league level at this
point. Can I ask you something? And yeah. I don't want this to piss off my Dodger kinfolk. I bleed it blue.
But I'm being honest about Dustin May.
Me too. And this is going to be an honest question. Do you think Dustin May was affected by the spider tack ban and the, you know, just the spin rate has gone down, you know, obviously, but injury, right? But
yeah.
Do you think that's a guy that was trying to overcompensate a bit that gets hurt? I mean, I saw a video on TikTok. I want to give the creator credit. I'll have to look it up, but was talking about Corbin Burnes and
I was going to bring him up.
Spider Tech and just kind of, you know, you've seen his strikeouts per 9 go down. You've seen his, you know, spin rate go down. Hard hit, whatever contact go up, like, and it's all kind of alluded at maybe there was a little zip missing, a little something. And is that the gradual breaking down of a ligament, or is that the I don't know, the telltale signs of a sticky substance being removed, or now, you know, trying to get used to the grip of a new substance. I'm not claiming anything. I'm not accusing anybody. It's just, you know, this was the league standard in a lot of ways. So,
well, I mean, the short answer is I don't know, because I'm not a major league pitcher quite yet. I'm almost there. I'm not there yet, but I mean, I will take the word of the people who have been there or done that and have been affected by the spider attack or the sticky stuff ban in baseball. I mean, just look at Gerrit Cole. Just look at Tyler Glasnow. Look at Corbin Burnes. Look at, the wide vat. Jackson Job, the Tigers' top pitching prospect, just got announced. He's getting Tommy John today. It was just reported. I don't know if that has anything to do with sticky stuff, but we do know that Tommy John is rampant across the league, and Dustin May had to get it twice. He blew out his arm twice. And Tyler Glasnow, we all know, did say in an interview that he 100% blames the midseason crackdown on sticky stuff for why his arm blew out, because he was trying to grip the ball harder than ever before to replicate the spin that he was getting with sunscreen and rosin, the sunscreen and rosin cocktail that he was using to expand his spin, to just increase his spin. Sorry.
Increase. Yeah.
And I think that makes sense, because look at what's happening with the Dodgers right now and how many arms are blowing out. I do think good teams like the Dodgers are using things like edgetronic cameras, which show pitchers the importance of good spin. And because I think a lot of pitchers can throw hard, but I don't think a lot of pitchers can get great spin. I mean, not everybody has big, giant hands around the baseball to really spin the ball in a different way than others. Like, some pitchers have to really, add a little extra stress on their elbow, a little more torque, a little more bend, a little more whip on their throws.
There's a lot of different ways to throw the baseball as well.
Yeah, and that's probably, and it's from wrist to, it's from hand to wrist to elbow. It's all connected in some way, right? And I think that trying to add extra velocity and extra spin, especially at the same time, is obviously blowing out arms across the league. And if you're not going to allow some sort of uniform substance for pitchers to use, when every team around the league is encouraging players to spin the ball like nobody's ever done it before.
And now they want to and you have to meet a certain league, right? Like, hey,
20. Yeah, and like you're looking at like these edgetronic cameras telling you you have to meet a certain amount of RPMs for your pitch to be effective.
Right.
It's forcing them to do things they've never done before, or to try harder than they've ever done before, and it's hurting their arms more than ever before. And if baseball is not going to step in and make something legal,
collusion to keep player salaries down, keep injuries high, and shorten the length of a pro pitcher. I don't know, but there's a lot of talk about an upcoming, player strike.
Let me get this straight. So you're saying that you think that the league potentially wants players to be blowing their arms out because of how pitchers' salaries have increased, like Gerrit Cole, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, because of these big contracts that have been given out to pitchers, that the league doesn't necessarily have a problem with big name pitchers blowing their arms out, because that's going to incentivize teams to give out smaller contracts to pitchers going forward?
I don't think it's impossible. I know it's a little conspiratorial, but I think that if you listen to the guys that are really in the know, like your Jeff Passans in the league, they're reporting that there's going to be a stoppage after the 2026 season. And that, Rob Manfred has even said that, like, hey, stoppage is good for negotiations and blah, blah, blah. Look, baseball is the most profitable it's ever been. It's bringing in the most viewers, the most amount of money. But there is a contingency of owners that are not interested in growing the sport. They're interested only in growing their own financial interests. John Fisher.
Their profit margins.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or the return on investment, however you want to spin it too, whatever. My point is, I think that there might be behind the scenes a little bit more pressure to meet these unrealistic demands for spin rate and velocity to equate to effectiveness, which then means that only a select group of players are getting the opportunity to even try and get into the big leagues. I'm not even talking about getting onto a major league field, but getting into the minor league systems, even get drafted. We are seeing a record number of Tommy John surgeries in high school players and younger, in college players. I mean, just a few years ago, it was like brave of the Dodgers to take a young Walker Buehler after, you know, he was planned to get a Tommy John after his whatever. Senior year. Jesus, I'm stumbling. But my point is, I think there's enough money in the game that there are owners that want to control the payout of players. And hey, if you got a salary cap, yeah, that means you're going to have a salary floor that could affect some small markets. But ultimately, if enough owners are going to make a little bit more money at the end of the day, they'll do some things that are unpopular and I think actually hurt the game. So I'm not saying that the uptick in arm injuries is specifically because they're, you know, is some colluding force behind the scenes that's trying to manage the, you know, earning potential of pitchers. But I'm saying that it wouldn't be the first time markets stifled the earnings of its employees.
I don't know if, like, baseball teams would be in on that, because windows, like, let's say for the Pirates, for example, they know that they're not going to be able to keep Paul Skeens most likely. So their incentive to hurt Paul Skeens is virtually non-existent, right?
Not saying the incentive but the incentive is to get him on the field as much as possible.
Right.
And perform, just like a young Clayton Kershaw was overused with Don Mattingly for years. It's not because you're trying to hurt the guy, you're trying to win the game.
But
and it's like, what do? You use talent while you got it. Yeah. And if there is a way that teams like the Pirates are trying to stay competitive with teams like the Dodgers, it's by adopting analytics. Jesse, analytics like the way we know them today with these edutronic cameras and things like that are foreign to some teams like the Chicago White Sox, who are raving about, oh, we just got this pitching machine that could mimic the pitches of any pitcher in the league. And they're like, other teams have had this for 8 years. What are you talking about? You're just like getting this? My point is that technology is driving a lot of this. And if you're, you know, the higher paying teams like your Dodgers or Yankees, and you're investing in one technology, even at the detriment of your star players, I think you're going to go for it. And if that data continues to show that these are the analytics that will equate the success of a Gerrit Cole, of a Clayton Kershaw, if they get these RPMs, you're going to get younger and younger athletes trying to mimic those results. And by doing that, they're going to get these same kind of, you know, cameras and machines to help meet those metrics. That's what I'm getting at.
And I do think
it's a holistic problem, really.
I don't know if, like, MLB wants...
Perpetuated, like, by the MLB.
I got you. I get what you're saying. I do think it's possible that teams, when negotiating contracts with players, they do want to scare players into accepting less money by telling them, hey, you should accept this contract now because you might get hurt. I think that that's how, like, teams like the Braves have been able to sort of... manipulate their players, like Acuna, like Strider. Did Strider accept a contract? I'm sorry. I'm trying to remember who accepted contracts for them. But, like, accepting
Acuna,
players,
the Albies,
accepting extensions early, out of fear that they'll get hurt, and that might make them take less money. So yes, I do think that teams and the league would encourage players to take extensions earlier than they would normally want to and hit free agency, because they are, you know, they would be fearful that they might get hurt. I mean, look what just happened with Garrett Crochet and the Red Sox. He took a big deal with the Red Sox, but this is but he took the extension before he hits free agency, right? I mean, this is coming on the heels of Tyler Glasnow getting traded from the Rays to the Dodgers, signing the extension just immediately before hitting free agency, and that turned out to be a smart move for him because he's been hurt for the majority of his time since signing with the Dodgers. So there is reason for the league to sort of or for teams to sort of make players feel like they should take less money and take it now out of fear of getting hurt down the road. And it is possible that they would use that in negotiation. I'm just not sure if they would.
Jesse, it's not
they would encourage injury. Happened. I'm just not sure if they would want injury to happen.
Well, look at like Josh Hader and the Brewers, their fallout, you know? I mean, and I feel like the Brewers kind of, for a small market team, have like a bad PR rep with players in arbitration. You know, they trade a lot of guys away and, you know, kind of have hurt feelings about it. But I think they got to be very business-minded because they have to maximize their talent, you know, and, well, they do it.
They've done a good job of proving that they didn't need to keep Josh Hader to have a great bullpen. I mean, they just
definitely
replace Josh Hader with Devin Williams. They replace Devin Williams with, now they have like Abner Uribe, who's like leading the league in holds. You know, they're really good at like sort of recycling that process and showing that like paying for big bullpen arms isn't necessarily
to your point. And just to wrap mine up, I think as more high profile and high paid pitchers go down, it's easier and easier for other teams to go, well, look at this. I don't know. Yeah, you had a great year this year, but who knows next year? I don't know. I think analytics can be spun either way. Obviously, you know, Scott Boras has used it for a long time to get the most money possible out of teams. And now that information is more and more, you know, available and widely distributed, it's been harder and harder for Boras to get big money for players. But here we are. This is just one man's little conspiratorial little.
Well, he had to, it took a whole, it took like a, that 1+1 deal with the Giants for Boras to finally get Blake Snell, that big contract.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it that that was the holdup for teams on giving Blake Snell that big contract was potential injuries, right? And then he signs with the Dodgers, gets his big deal. First season with the Dodgers, he's having shoulder issues.
And Jesse, you know, a lot of Dodger fans blame one man for that, right? A lot of guys, a lot of gals all blame Mark Pryor.
Yeah.
And Jess, again, not to be conspiratorially minded, but where was Mark Pryor before he was in L.A.?
Chicago Cubs. Oh, no.
San Diego.
Oh, you're right. He was in San Diego. Yeah.
So he was in San Diego before he joined the Dodgers in 2020.
Oh, don't tell me you think he's blowing out arms for the Dodgers for his San Diego allegiance.
I think that when you have success and you have data and you have data that proves it, that businesses will follow that recipe, right? So I think guys like Michael King and Yu Darvish and, you know, they get on these new plans, right, that are different from the teams they've been before. I know Darvish had a cup of coffee with the Dodgers, didn't work out in 2017. But, you know, this would have been his first time with Pryor out in San Diego after that season. So a lot of guys, I'm not blaming him, but I'm just saying there is a lot of talk that Pryor's approach to pitching and analytic driven practice and max effort is limiting guys innings potentials by just overworking. You know, we've heard Oral Hershiser even talk about this, that he thinks guys are trying to, you know, basically max out every workout, and it's like, no, that's not how you should do it.
Right. Well, that's why rest and recovery is being they're even like overdoing it with rest and recovery because of how much they're doing it with maxing out your effort during workouts. They're also maxing out the recovery. That's become just as important. There has to be some sort of happy medium here because I don't know if it's a Mark Pryor issue. I think it's got to be more of a Dodgers strength and conditioning issue. There's something there. And, you know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Pryor had something to do with it, because he did blow his arm out. He did. He was like a max effort guy, mm-hmm. that kind of his he had a short prime, you know, and that could be part of it. I'm willing to say that I think it's more of an organizational thing. And also, they are just notorious for investing in pitchers that were already hurt before. So that's why it's kind of like coming out. It looks worse than it actually is with the Dodgers.
And just to your point, I just want to add a little caveat. Mark Pryor was in a front office role with the Padres. He wasn't like a pitching coach, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just, I'm just connecting dots, because there are, I've heard a lot of Dodger fans like blame Mark Pryor for all the arm injuries in the pen. So
something needs to change.
That's why I thought it was relevant.
No doubt about it. Something needs to change. But even with all that, you know, it's still working out pretty well for the Dodgers right now. And I do, before we wrap this up, I do want to give a couple of quick shout outs. Tanner Scott was great this series. he came in the eighth inning today against the Padres, pitched really well. Alex Vesia absolutely dropped dick on the Padres today. He struck out the side to end the series, so shout out to him. Anthony Banda pitched 2 2/3 scoreless innings in this series, and pitched out of a bases loaded one out jam in this,
which was a huge
moment in this game. So just shout out to the bullpen and their incredible work in this series, because that's what really got it done. Andy Páez had an amazing outfield assist to throw a runner out at home plate.
Don't run on Páez.
99 miles an hour. Almost 100 miles an hour was the throw. Yeah.
Up or something? Do you know anything? Like, do you remember that was like a thing about Verdugo? It was like, oh, Verdugo's got a good arm. He was a pitcher growing up.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, bring in Páez instead of Kike next time. See what happens. But
dude, that would be fun. Let Páez pitch.
Not quite as entertaining of a personality as Kike Hernandez is, unfortunately. Hey, but
he's got that Cuban missile, though, dude. We still miss you, Puig.
Also had the big hit in game one, the big game winning hit. One note about game three. I think I mentioned this earlier, but I will say it again. Today, in today's game, Tatis, Machado, Merrill, and Arias went 1-for-14 for the Padres today. So Dodgers pitching really shut them down. It only gets worse for the Padres coming up against the Dodgers when they come to Dodger Stadium next weekend. It's the Blake Snell bobblehead game. So that's a little bit of a troll from the Dodgers PR department, as well as the Dodgers World Series replica jersey giveaway.
It would sting a little bit more if he'd been freaking pitching, dude.
He did just have a bullpen session, so he is. It looks like he is on his way back in like the next month or so. Tyler Glass now also said he's feeling pretty good. They're just sort of there's some weird things going on between the Dodgers and Glass now right now about when he's going to pitch. But I think the Dodgers are taking it pretty slow with Glasnow. I would imagine we're going to see Snell back before Glasnow. That would be my guess at this point. Shohei Ohtani also had another bullpen session, and it's looking like the Dodgers are saying that he could be back before the All-Star break. Now, that might be a pipe dream, but if that's true, that means he's very likely to come back just after the All-Star break. In Dodger speak, that would be my guess. But supposedly he looked pretty good. Now, Dodgers are going back home. They're going to play the San Francisco Giants, who are just keeping up with the Padres here. And it'll be Yama, Kirsch, and Dustin May pitching this weekend. Giants have not released their starters yet. We're not going to sort of break down this series, but just sort of give me your, your brief rundown and take of what to expect from this series.
I'm excited, man. The Giants are proving that they're not a flash in the pan. There is some real team chemistry. I think Matt Chapman is hitting the IL, which is a huge blow to their offense. I don't mean to disrespect his defense. But, Jesse, it's great to see the rivals. It's weird not getting to play the Giants until, what is this, like, June 12th or 13th we're playing it for the first time. Like, that feels weird. I definitely love getting to play every team every year. I love it. I know you're indifferent about it. I love it. But yes, I don't like seeing the Padres this late. I don't like seeing the Giants this late, but it's going to be a big test. It does feel like there's a little bit of a, lackluster feel, even though both of these teams are right there for, I mean, a good series away from the best record in the NL, both teams. So I'm so excited.
Right, but now, would you say that you feel like Dodgers and Giants is still the rivalry in the NL West, or do you feel like Dodgers Padres feels like a bigger game at this point?
Jesse, I feel like, as a Dodger purist, as a baseball purist, as a baseball fan, as a Dodger fan, as a man of my age, I know that the rivalry is the Dodgers and the Giants. Max Muncy was on Foul Territory talking about it. It's Dodgers and Giants. They both came here from the East Coast together. New York specifically, obviously, duh. They're kindred spirits, if you will. You know, mortal enemies. Cain and Abel. Whatever. I know they were brothers. Whatever. They kill each other. Either way.
Hey, Dodgers, Giants, we're kind of like brothers. We're from the same state. One's older. You know, it makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. My whole point is there's just something about that orange and black that I just – hate, the hated ones, whatever. But for our money, Jess, we can't lie. We're getting older. The Giants just haven't been that relevant since that 107 wins season they had, or whatever, 108.
But even then, though, the Giants have won three World Series in the past, like, two decades, and the Padres have never won one. You know, yeah. So, like, I view the Dodgers games versus the Padre games to be, they have, like, lately they've had a bigger feel to them. They
but you
definitely
can't just say lately, because it's been at least a half decade now, right?
But also those the recent Giants teams haven't really felt like a true like united team to me, because it seems like there's been a lot of, like, a mishmash of different players. It kind of feels like there's just a bunch of different spare parts. The Padres felt like a core and a team that was designed to beat the Dodgers. It reminds me a little bit of, like, the Houston Rockets when the Warriors were really good. Daryl Morey and the Rockets really built a team just designed specifically to beat the Warriors. That's what it was. That was their whole purpose. And that's kind of what I feel like the Padres are. They're a team that's designed to beat the Dodgers. And I just don't get that feel from the Giants. Even though they're really good this year, we're going to find out. We're going to find out.
Dude, I completely agree.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting, right? Because I guess I haven't seen the Giants play the Dodgers this year, so I don't know how for real they are. I love Logan Webb, even though he's the enemy. I just love that style of pitcher. You know what I've been saying all episode, Jess? He's a dog. So that guy's fun. And it just feels like he fucking hates me. So it makes me want to fucking hate him more. And then I kind of respect him. I don't know. I don't know how to feel.
No, it's you gotta like, I think everything that people say about the Dodgers is all coming from a place of a love. And it seems like Logan Webb is, like, the only one on the Giants team that feels that has the balls to say anything at all. So I gotta respect
like the one that's been there long enough.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Like, Willie Adames talking shit about the Dodgers is like, dude, we beat you in the playoffs twice, bro, when you were in Milwaukee.
Yeah, we're like, dude, you hate us because you were on the Tampa Bay Rays?
And
is
and
that
Milwaukee
why you hate us?
Brewers.
Or the Brewers? Like, what?
Yeah.
You short shit?
Anyways, well, this was a fun one. Dodgers take 2 out of 3 from San Diego. We'll finish up here with, we'll do a little update on the standings. Why don't I start here, since we're already on the NL West. Dodgers maintain their one game lead. The Padres drop behind the Giants, who are now in second place. Arizona's in fourth place, 6.5 back. Rockies are 27.5 back. They are right on our rear there, Brandon.
Half game.
Chicago Cubs are pretty much kind of running away with the Central. They're 5 games up on St. Louis, 5.5 up on Milwaukee, 6.5 up on the Reds, 13.5 up on the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the New York Mets are, I mean, they are exceeding my expectations. Not that I didn't think they'd be good. I didn't think they'd be this good. They are coming off of a series win over the Dodgers. They're 43-24. They're 4.5 up over the Phillies, who have been struggling a lot lately.
Dude, Jesse, that Mets home record, 25-7.
Yeah, absurd.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
Almost 500 on the road, you know, 18-17, but
yeah.
Wow. 8-2 in their last 10. The Mets are on fire, dude. They're rolling right now.
They are. And the Nationals, I was hoping they would go on a little bit of run. They've started falling apart a little bit. They are 12.5 back, but nobody has fallen apart more than the Atlanta Braves, who are back down to 14 games back. I thought they were going to go on a run. Miami Marlins are 17.5 back in last place. But Brandon, I got to ask you, are you officially putting the nail in the coffin on the Atlanta Braves 2025 season?
Yeah, I am, dude. I just don't think there's enough time, and I don't think there's enough pitching depth. I don't think there's enough depth in the lineup.
They're having trouble scoring runs.
Yeah, dude. It's tough. Like, I don't know. The Braves are such a deep organization. There's been some weird stuff going on over the season, not just with injuries, but it seems like bad luck. Chris Sale's still out there competing, and that's what they're going to give you, right? Like, I don't think the Braves are going to be a pushover in any series, but it just feels like they lack that that kill shot, right? That knockout punch that they used to just seem like they had at any given inning. Right?
They've also been blowing games in really, really terrible fashion. I mean, like, really bonkers way to lose games. So,
man, talking about losing games in bonkers ways, your John Fisher's Athletics out in the AL West, dude, are 26-43, 12-23 at home, 14-20 on the road. Losers.
They're actually 26-44. They just lost.
Jeez, man. That's tough. Yeah, they're 11.5 games back. That was my pick for the AL West champions. Just the more we get removed from that pit day, the dumber and dumber I feel. The less and less of a ball knower I feel like. But then I see people that were like, dude, the Rangers were going to be good this year. I just don't know. Are they a 32-35 team, or are they a 35-32 team? Like,
Marcus Semien is starting to get hot. Watch out for the Rangers.
Seager's hurt again. He's not. I thought he was. I might be tripping. Anyways, moving on to the Angels, 32-34. Mariners, 33-33. I guess per ownership, they're right where they want to be.
I think you have yesterday's standings.
Do I really? I got to refresh, dude.
Because Angels are 33-34.
I see 32-34 right now.
No, we have two different things here right now. That's weird.
I'm on MLB.com.
Oh, I'm on ESPN.
Whoa, dude.
Sorry, bro.
Dude, you're blowing me. Anyways, yeah. Astros 36-30. I feel like they're the rival of the Dodgers. I fucking hate those guys.
Yeah.
Anywho,
it seems like they're about to run away from that division. That's what it
does
like.
Feel like that. It feels like they're inevitable.
They're doing it without Yordan Alvarez too,
which is
that's
a big dog that got to eat.
Yeah.
Your Chicago White Sox only 20.5 games back, so we'll see what they look like in the second half. But at 23-44, it's not looking good. Royals, one game over 500 at 34-33. 9.5 games back. I did not see that coming. Guardians, 34-32. Twins, 35-31. And the best record in baseball. Jesse, the Detroit Tigers. That man, Spencer Torkelson. I tried to warn you, brother. You know what he does? He mashes. He's having a hell of a season. Told you I'm a ball knower.
He's hitting .230, so his average has dipped a little bit, but he's still hitting homers. He homered yesterday.
Dude, 47 ribbies, that's what I'm looking at. That is a run producer, and that's what you got to have. Hey, what's Max Muncy's average? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Max can see. He's a dog. But the Orioles, man, would you have thought that the Orioles would be dead last in the argument for one of the worst records in the league, in the American League, in mid-June?
No, but they're 7-3 in their last 10, and they just won again today over the Detroit Tigers, just FYI.
Whoa!
They blew out the Tigers. So we'll see. We'll see. They could get hot.
My pick, I believe your pick, our pick, the Boston Red Sox, 33-36. Bueller's been bad. Injuries have plagued the team. Who knows who they really are, but the Rays are somehow just kind of in the middle of the pack, not playing in a big league stadium, 36-31. And the Blue Jays, who would have thought? They are back in it, only four games out, 37-30. And the evil empire themselves, the New York Yankees, 40-25. Jess, any surprises, any standouts in those standings for you?
Just the Orioles. The Orioles are a surprise of how bad they are. But I do think they're going to be a much better team the second half of the season than they are in the first half of the season. I think that's the one big surprise. The big surprise is that the Yankees have done so well in this division without Gerrit Cole, I think.
That surprised me, to be honest. I thought I don't know. I thought Fried was a great signing, but, man, he's just been superb.
Not against the Dodgers, brother.
Oops.
Sorry about it. Yep. But the Dodgers are still in first place. They will battle for the Giants to figure out who's going to be in first place for another week. So we'll see what happens. This was a fun one, Brandon.
How long do you think this NL West clump at the top is going to last? You think it's going to be an all-season thing?
Feels like it. It's feeling like this could be another one of those tight races until the Dodgers get their pitching staff fully healthy. And then I do think that you could see the Dodgers start to pull away at the end. But that it'll be like this for the next 2 months, I would say.
I feel that way. I really was impressed in some instances with the Padres this week, but I felt more worried about, like, hey, is Yu Darvish and Michael King going to come back? Because if not, like, I think the Giants are going to overpass them. So
we'll see. I mean, we'll see, because, like, I still think that the Padres lineup should be better. But, hey, I've been wrong before. But either way, Brando, this was a fun one. I love you, brother. You know, nothing makes me happier than reporting on the Dodgers after a big win over the Padres. Ooh. And now we get to see them face the Giants. I mean, this is just pennies are falling from the sky for deferred collusion. So let's enjoy it while it lasts, all right?
I hope you get a nickel. Jesse, I just want to say one last thing, dude. Happy anniversary to you.
Thank you, yes.
Wishing you a mitzvah. Nothing but the best. I love you.
Thank you so much.
Have a great time tonight, dude. And, hey, let's go Dodgers.
Go Blue. Go Michaela.
Hey, Michaela, we love you, dude.